gentlemen, you see before you... No, that's wrong. Let me say you have before you your illustrious but very humble servant, Babe Ruth. As you know, I am a baseball player and a specialist in home runs. I've made a record in home runs, and now I am making a record of quite another kind. I hope you'll stand for it and like it as much as you did the other. As a matter of fact, I am quite unused to this sort of thing. I am more at home on the diamond than on the disc. However, they tell me I can do almost anything when I'm really wound up. And they tell me also that it's the easiest thing in the world to get wound up on a phonograph, so here goes. I see by the papers that Babe Ruth, that's me, is what is known as a popular hero. One of the papers even refers to me as a Superman. I'm not quite sure what that is, but I've often found myself in the soup, so perhaps that makes me a Superman. But to return to that popular hero stuff, it seems that the great big American public likes to have a speech from its popular heroes. I haven't been able to deliver speeches on the diamond. I've been too busy delivering wallops. Thousands of fans have seen me swinging the stick, and millions have seen my handsome face in the papers. But mighty few have ever heard me make a speech, so here I am, facing a phonograph horn for the first time in my life, and believe me, folks, I'd rather face the most dangerous pitcher in the league. I feel like smashing that darn thing. If it was a bit of leather, you'd hear some concussion. I suppose you folks want to hear some real inside stuff about baseball. I'll give you a short history of my life, though. I was born when quite a little chap. In fact, I was very little when I was born. I can remember it all right. I used to accompany my parents on their evening walk. And when they thought I'd walked far enough, they'd say, "Now, Babe, run home." They said it to me every night, and those words, "run home," put the idea of home runs in my noodle. The rest was easy. All I had to do was to join a big league outfit and make a specialty of home runs. You see how easy it was once having made up my mind? When I go into a game, I go in what is called the psychological frame of mind. It's a wonderful thing, this psychology. When my psychological frame of mind meets the psychological moment, the psychological wallop follows. That's how it's done. I make it a rule never to miss an opportunity of hacking another notch in that darned old home run record.
What, never, Babe?
No, never.
What, never?
Well, hardly ever. Well, as I was saying, I'm not accustomed to public speaking, and, folks, I have to conserve my energies for tomorrow's game, and I guess you've heard enough about my smashing record. I suppose if I don't quit, you'll want to smash this one. So goodbye and good luck.
Hello, Babe.
Hello.
You know me, don't you, Babe?
I can't place your face, but your shadow is very familiar.
I'm Lou Gehrig. Now, do you remember me?
Remember you? After the past summer, I'll never forget you.
It's funny you didn't recognize me right away. I played on the same team with you all season.
Yes, but you were so close to me, I was afraid to look back to see who you were.
I gave you a great race, didn't I, Babe?
Boy, you ran me raggy. Listen, Lou, how did you get the stocking home run?
It was like this. I watched you and read how much money you were getting. And I got to thinking.
Thinking? With what?
Never mind about with what. I went to college. Columbia, in fact. You've heard of Columbia, haven't you?
Sure, that's the college entirely surrounded with delicatessen stores and Yankee Scouts. How many years did you go to college?
I was 7 years in the freshman class.
They can't keep a guy 7 years in the same class.
That's what I tried to tell them.
What good did college do you? I didn't go to college, and look at me. I got further than you did.
I know, but only 6 or 7 home runs further. I'm young yet. Give me a chance. Say, Babe, no fooling. You were my hero when I was in college.
Why did you have to pick on me?
You shouldn't be sore, Babe. There's room for both of us in baseball.
Tell that to the enemy pitchers.
Do you remember when I first reported to the Yanks, Babe?
Do I? You were so green, the groundkeepers tried to go over you with a rake.
I was just a raw student.
I don't know anything about the student part of it, but I'll tell the world you were raw. As a matter of fact, the first day you reported, I didn't see your face at all. I couldn't keep my eyes off your feet.
What was the matter with my feet?
They were so big, I thought you were standing in a couple of trucks. Is there any truth in the story that you sell old shoes for bungalows?
Oh, never mind my feet.
I don't mind them if you don't.
You're no Apollo Belvedere yourself.
No who?
Apollo Belvedere. You know who Apollo Belvedere was, don't you, babe?
He's one of those new Washington pitchers, ain't he?
Gee, but you're dumb, babe.
Hey, listen, Big Feet. Don't you call anybody dumb. When you first joined the Yanks, you were so dumb, we had to number all the players so you could find out which side you played on.
Gee, was I that bad?
Lou, I don't want to be hard on you. You're a good kid, and I like you. But you were so dumb, you thought the St. Louis Cardinals were appointed by the church. When Huggins told us we were to meet the senators, you thought we were going into politics. You thought that inside baseball was played in the house.
You ain't so smart either. Say, babe, tell me something. Is it true that you eat 20 hot dogs during a baseball game?
That's one of those fool lies. Why, 20 hot dogs during a game would kill any man.
I know it.
A man who would eat 20 hot dogs is a pig during a ball game.
Of course he would.
Well, you didn't really believe that of me, did you, Lou?
Of course not. How many do you eat during a ball game, babe?
19.
Say, babe, you've taken off quite a bit of weight in the past 4 years.
Look at my figure, kid.
All you've got to do now is to diet 10 or 15 more years and you'll almost look human.
Boy, I'm careful of what I eat these days.
Listen, babe, you have a farm where you grow your own food, don't you?
Yes, I have a farm.
Is it a nice farm?
Well, it better be, or I'm out a lot of money.
What do you raise there?
A lot of things. Celery, for instance.
Really? You raise celery?
Of course. What's a surprise?
I thought Colonel Rupert was the fellow that always raised your celery.
I said celery, not salary. You know what celery is, don't you?
Sure I do. I had a roommate once who used to keep me awake all night, eating it in bed.
You won the China automobile.
Say, babe, speaking of automobiles, what's the matter with you lately? You haven't hit anybody with your automobile.
It's getting harder and harder. There are too many motorists after the same jaywalker these days.
And I haven't read of your being arrested for speeding lately either.
I've found a way to avoid that.
How?
When a policeman stops me, I autograph the car and give it to him as a souvenir.
Gee, it must be great to get $500,000 a year like you do.
Money isn't everything, Lou.
That's what Colonel Rupert said when I asked him for a raise.
In this game, Lou, you must start from the bottom and work up.
Say, babe, why did you start your baseball life as a pitcher?
In those days, I thought a man should work for a living.
Gee, what a great year the Yanks had this season.
Not so good.
What do you mean, not so good?
We lost a couple of games, didn't we?
Yeah, I guess that was when I wasn't hitting. I've got to practice up this winter and bat better.
If you bat any better next year, I'll put nails in your breakfast food. Listen, Lou, did it ever occur to you that you get a great fate batting after me?
How come?
A pitcher is under a great strain when pitching to me. And after I strike a home run, he is an easy mark for you fellas.
Is that so? And how about the effect on a pitcher when you've nearly broken your back swinging like a gate and struck out by a mile? He ain't so nervous facing the fellas who come up after you then, is he?
Even when I strike out, I do it so hard that I scare the pitcher to death.
No matter how you cut that stuff, it's still baloney. Why, as a matter of fact, you get the break.
How?
When you go to bat, the pitcher always knows that I'm up next. What's the result? He's so nervous, he puts one right where anybody could knock it out of the lot.
Now I'll tell one.
All joking aside, babe, what is the secret of your home run hitting? How do you stand when you hit the ball?
I stood on flat on both feet until you came along.
And now what?
You have me on my toes.
Well, I'm going to keep you there, too.
Say, kid, lay off of that big mouth stuff.
I didn't mean anything personal, babe.
Okay, Lou. I've got to be beating it along now.
So have I. You know, we've been talking for the phonograph. You don't suppose you've broken the record, do you?
Between the two of us, we've broken all kinds of records. Say goodbye to the folks.
Goodbye. See you all next season.
How will they know you when they see you?
They'll know you, won't they?
Of course they'll know me.
Well, wherever they see you, they'll know I'm the guy that's right on your heels. So long,
so long, folks.
Babe, you've been ramming around all morning. You were out even before we were. We were trying to get this broadcast set up, and we heard you banging away over in the woods. And we saw you come back with your share, at least. Perhaps not the limit, but how did you find hunting conditions out in the woods?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's just like this. The early bird gets the worm. And well, I love worms.
Well, I want to say one thing for you, babe. You were the first man up this morning, and while we were all sitting around last night looking at the pictures that you and Bob Edge and Jack Matthews took up in Nova Scotia, the movies. We didn't get to bed until pretty late, but you were right up on the job this morning and out here in the woods before we were even out of bed. How does this stack up with Nova Scotia?
Well, I tell you, it was very good. Nova Scotia, we had to do a lot more work. Work was harder, but down here, it just seems the dogs are working too well, and we got nice shots, fair shots. We didn't take advantage of the bird. We let them get far away as far as we could, and then let them have it.
Well, you didn't see any moose out here, did you?
No, the only moose I saw here was Jack Matthews.
You must have run into a twig. I see a little blood on your cheek. I think you rammed yourself into a limb.
A lot of them.
To baseball fans everywhere from Maine to California, the name of one player will always stand out. It is true that one player doesn't make a team. That's why the New York Yankees have compiled the greatest records in the history of baseball. But no one can deny that this player's amazing performances did miracles for baseball in general and the New York Yankees in particular. And no one enjoyed seeing him slam one over the fence more than Colonel Rupert. I now present Babe Ruth.
Well, you asked me to say something about Colonel Rupert. Yes, I can say 1,000 things about him, and glad to say that they're all good. Colonel Rupert was a dear friend of me, and I respected him very highly. Yes, it is too bad that baseball should lose such a fine man. He talked baseball, he worked with it, he slept with it. All he wanted his boys to do was to go out and win. I kept in touch with the Colonel all the time he was sick. And when he was getting low, I called and asked Mr. Brennan if I could see the Colonel. He said he would let me know. In about an hour, he phoned me and said it was okay. The Colonel wanted to see me. Well, I was over there and nothing. I walked into his room, and he said, "Hello, Babe," very faintly. It seemed very strange for him to call me Babe, because he had never called me Babe before. It was always Ruth, and I will never forget those two words as long as I live. About a minute later, I started to leave the room. The nurse called me back. I went back, he shook my hand, and asked me to get his slippers. He wanted to get up. I tried to cheer him up every way I could, telling him that we were going to see the World Series over the opening day, the game of the opening day, and everything I could to try to cheer him. And I am very glad to say that I shook his hands before he left us, and may God have mercy on his soul.
Reel 5, Colgate's camera close-up of Babe Ruth. Here is the most famous baseball player of all time, the one and only Babe Ruth. Who's going to win the American League pennant?
Why, the New York Yanks.
Oh, Babe, you might be prejudiced, but let's ask you who's going to win the National League pennant.
I think the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well, Babe, tell me this. What do you think of this new Mexican baseball league?
Why, it's mainly a lot of hot air.
Who's the greatest ball player playing baseball today?
Well, I think Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio.
What was the greatest baseball team of all time?
I would say the Yanks of 1927, because on that team was Bob Musil, Tony Lazzari, Earl Coombs, Herb Pennock, and many others, and a good manager named Miller Huggins. And there was another player on that team by the name of Lou Gehrig.
I hope
he is never forgotten.
Thanks so much. Good luck and good night, Babe Ruth. And that's the 3-0 mark for tonight. Next Friday night, we'll be back same time, same stations, with another edition of the Colgate Shave Cream Sports Newsreel.
Down through the years with sports at WOR, immortal names, great games and dates, and each night, WOR has brought the passing show to its listeners. As we've been reviewing some of those highlights, the man with us has been nodding his head and recalling the thrilling events, too. Now, perhaps you might be wondering who he is and why he hasn't said anything. Well, the reason he hasn't joined us in the reminiscing is that he had a most serious neck operation, and it's best that he not strain his throat. But it's the number one man of sports over those 25 years that WOR has been on the air. He's a man who, by himself, has written more sports history than any other man in that 25 years, and it's Babe Ruth.
Babe, how do you feel?
Well, Stan, I'll tell you, I feel pretty good. As far as circumstances are concerned, I had a pretty tough time in the hospital. And as far as people saying that you haven't any friends, I can say that they're all crazy.
Well, Babe,
because
that's very true.
I know I've had thousands of them since I've been in the hospital.
Well, we're certainly glad to hear you up and around, and we've had plenty of mail come to WOR, too, asking about you. And this on this 25th birthday, we're just tickled to death to see you up and around, and we know you're going to be out and be seeing some ball games before this year's over, right?
Well, I hope so. I know I've tried very hard this year to get back in the game I love, but it seems that some obstacle always gets in the way.
Well, Babe, I'm pretty sure that when you get back, and ready to go back into baseball, that this time there is going to be some spot for you, because that's where you should be. That's your game, isn't it, babe?
I hope so, and I love it. And I love the kids. That's what I'm really out for, the kids.
Well, the kids have certainly been with you all the way through on this illness, and I know that the youngsters of today are going to be mighty happy to hear you, hear your voice today. Thanks very, very much, Babe Ruth.
Well, so Babe Ruth, let's go to work on how to play the outfield. And first of all, how's the throat?
Well, I tell you, Red, it's not so good. Yeah, a lot of people put me down as an outfielder, yes. I play the outfield, and as much as I can tell the young boys how to play the outfield, as no one who the batter is in the first place, you must know if the batter's fast or not. Second, you must judge the speed of the runner going from first to second, or from second to third, or all around the bases. Then, if a man is on first base, especially a slow man, and you get a fast man up there hitting next, and he happens to hit a ball to right field, say, for instance, which I was playing, you can always catch that fella, not always, but if you watch that slow fella at second base, you know if you got a good arm, he will not go. And a lot of times that man is supposed to be fast who hit the ball to right field. If you got your head up, you can throw that ball to first base and catch him, I'd say seven out of ten times, which I have done.
In other words, a lot of times, Babe, when a batter gets a little overconfident or callous and takes that big turnaround first, the right fielder, if he can throw accurately and with strength, can pick him out off first base.
Yeah, if he's got his head up, he can pick that fella. I've seen Dixie Walker do it over in Brooklyn. It's a great play, and it's a nice play to watch.
And then what would you say is the next point?
Well, the fella's got to keep his head up to the extent. I would say, if a ball is hit to an outfielder, the first thing he's got to think of, who the runner is, where to play him, where he hits, left to right field, and so forth. Then, if the ball is hit over his head, never back up on a ball. Always run to a spot where you think the ball is coming down. Never back up. Then if you run back to the spot where you think the ball is coming down, you will be within 2 or 3 feet anyhow. And then if the ball is out of your reach, then you know it cannot be caught.
Babe, how important is it for the outfielder to study the weather conditions?
Well, the weather conditions means an awful lot. You can always look up. Most ballparks always have flags up there. They're waving and waving and waving, different pennant flags, which shows you which way the wind's blowing. You can play that player accordingly. And then you also got to watch the pitcher. The pitcher can help you out an awful lot. He can pitch according to the way you play. If he pitches on the outside and you're playing left field, the man hits the ball to right field is going to make the outfielder look very bad. But if he pitches according to the way he's supposed to pitch to make that man hit the left field, why, then you can see a perfect play.
Well, Babe, what point would you make to a kid about being certain that he doesn't get blinded by the sun?
Well, the sun field is a very funny thing. I would never want to play the sun field. Even when Miller Huggins was with the club, I told Miller, I said, I don't want to play the sun field. Because back in 1918, I played the sun field for Ed Barrow, who was manager of the ball club then. And I lost the ball in the sun. And I said, it's going to be the last one I lose in the sun. And I had some idea of how I lost it. And the way I lost the ball in the sun was to get the ball right in the middle of the sun, and that's impossible to see. You got to play that ball on the side of the sun or on the outside circle of the sun. Never try to get that ball in the circle of the sun.
About the outfielder's throws to the infield and to home plate, how should they make them?
Well, an outfielder should always throw that ball on one hop. Never try to throw the ball on a bound, on the fly. Because in the first place, the catcher who catches the ball on the fly, the man running into him can hit him an awful bang. But if a man has got that ball on the first hop or something like that, he's braced himself and he can be ready for that bump. And I mean by that, always throw the ball on the first hop for the protection of your own player.
How should an outfielder hold his hands in catching a fly ball? What do you recommend?
Always catch the ball above your waist. That is, catch the ball in front of your face, because if you could drop the ball up there, you always have a chance to grab it again before it gets below your waist. But if you try to catch the ball below your waist and drop it, there's no chance in the world unless you can kick it and kick it up in the air and catch it again.
I've heard you outfielders talk about soft hands. What's the meaning of soft hands for an outfielder?
When a man catches a ball, the outfielder, or anybody, even goes for the infielder, always give with the ball. And when you give with the ball, it helps you to put your arm back in throwing position. And when you do that, you were always in position to throw the ball.
And if a kid kept his finger stiff, it's almost a cinch he's going to drop the ball.
Yes, and he's liable to break a finger, too.
Well, Babe, what about playing a ground ball in the outfield?
Well, a ground ball should always be blocked in the outfield. An outfielder can't play a ball like an infielder does. An infielder's got to play that ball with just that one particular second. Where an outfielder can block the ball, he can hit him in the chest, hit him in the knee, hit him anywhere, but still he can recover that ball before the man advances a base.
Babe, I want to thank you very much for this tremendous effort with your throat that you've made after a very busy day to come over here and talk to all the kids listening in, and you've given them a tremendous listing of very valuable points on how to play the outfield. Good luck to you, Babe.
Thank you very much, Ray.
This is Albert B. Chandler. At this time, I would like to introduce a boy who will be under the leadership of Babe Ruth when Babe takes over his new job as director of baseball for the American Legion. Representing the boys of the American Legion, speaking for every American boy, ladies and gentlemen, here is Larry Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chandler. I guess there are thousands of 13-year-old fellows like myself in this country who have heard about Babe Ruth ever since the first time they learned there was such a game as baseball. It's a great honor to be here, just to be able to tell Babe Ruth how proud we are to have him back in baseball, back where he belongs. And to know that Babe Ruth is going to be with us kids, well, that's the biggest and best thing that could happen in baseball. From all of us kids, Babe, it's swell to have you back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Bambino, the Sultan of Swat, Babe Ruth!
Gentlemen, you know how bad my voice sounds. Well, it feels just as bad. You know this baseball game of ours comes up from the youth. That means the boys. And after you're a boy and grow up to know how to play ball, then you come to the boys you see representing themselves today in your national pastime. The only real game, I think, in the world, baseball. As a rule, some people think if you give them a football or a baseball or something like that, naturally, they'll rap elites right away.
But you can't do that in baseball. You gotta start from way down the bottom when you're 6 or 7 years of age. You can't wait until you're 15 or 16. You gotta let it grow up with you. And if you're successful and you try hard enough, you're bound to come out on top, just like these boys have come to the top now. There's been so many lovely things said about me, and I'm glad that I've had the opportunity to thank everybody. Thank you.
You know, I didn't know Babe Ruth when he was a player, not personally. I knew him like the millions of fans did and worshipped him like all the kids in my neighborhood did. I dreamed of the day when I could see the Babe play. And one summer, when I was just about 13, I traveled from my home in Alabama then to visit my grandparents in Detroit, and soon the Yankees came to town. It didn't take too much persuasion to get my father to take me to the Tiger Park, which was then known as Navin Field. My heart pounded inside with the realization that I was to see the Babe in action. And then I prayed that he would hit a home run that day so that I would have something among my memories that I could cherish forever. But came the ninth inning and the Babe had not hit a home run, and it didn't appear that he would have that chance, for the Tigers had a 5-run lead and Babe had been at bat in the eighth. And the Babe didn't figure too strongly on his getting another time at bat either, because I saw him do something that only the Babe could do. He came in from the outfield at the end of the eighth inning and went right by the Yankee dugout over to the Detroit dugout where the clubhouse runway was then located. But instead of going inside, he stopped and sat down on the Detroit bench while his teammates were batting in the top of the ninth. That was not allowed, of course, but the Babe was different. Even the Tigers got a kick out of it. Only the Babe could get away with something like that. The big fella sat there joshing the Tigers when suddenly the Yankees began to rally, and before you knew it, the Babe had to get up off the Tiger bench, go back to the Yankee dugout, put his glove down, get his bat. His turn was coming up after all. The Babe stepped to the plate, and with runners on the bases, slammed a line drive over the center field fence at its deepest point. The Yankees scored 6 runs to win the game, and the Babe laughed heartily while giving it the inimitable Ruthian trot around the bases. That was the Babe. Years later, I got to know him personally while broadcasting Yankee games. Many a time I accompanied him on appearances at high school sports affairs and other baseball gatherings with the kids whom he held so dear. Always he talked about kids, how much he'd like to be able to do for them. He really loved them. It was great to be around the big guy. It was tough being around him when his health began to fail. I had the privilege of introducing him at the Yankee Stadium in 1947 when Babe Ruth Day was celebrated throughout the baseball world. And the ear-splitting ovation given him by the thousands was something I shall never forget. And the tan, top-coated, graying Babe thanked the throng in his now husky voice. And the old-timers with the lumps in their throats looking on that day, guys like Ty Cobb and Tris Speaker and other baseball greats of the past, were there to honor the greatest of them all. And the ailing Babe was proud and happy. A fabulous fellow whose hold on everyone was magical and majestic. He was the king of SWAT, the king of diamonds, the Babe. A few weeks ago at Yankee Stadium, I saw Babe for the last time. His uniform number 3 was to be retired forever in tribute to the Bambino. Many of his former Yankee teammates were there for the historic occasion. By now, the Babe was failing fast, but he beat back the pain that racked his body and appeared in the house that Ruth built for one more time. When William Harridge made the official retirement of the Babe's number and uniform, the crowd roared its acclamation of baseball's greatest hero. And while they were doing that, I walked over to the Babe and asked if he wished to say anything. His voice now was almost completely gone, and the Babe whispered, "Yes, I must." And then he stepped to the microphone at the Yankee Stadium and thanked the fans for the way they felt about him. A gaunt but gallant guy, thrilled by the roar of the crowd. The crowd thrilled and choked up by the sight of the man whose equal the world of sports will never again see. The Babe was deeply touched and whispered his appreciation. There wasn't a dry eye anywhere. I'm sure there isn't now.